program designed to help you navigate computer technology and the Internet. The show is hosted by Felicia King of Quality Plus Consulting and airs the first and third Saturdays of every month.
The show for you today is going to talk a lot about Windows 10 upgrades, because this is a very hot topic for most people nowadays. And I'm going to talk about all the little intricacies of doing that, because there's quite a lot of intricacies in doing it. So we'll talk about that. But also some social engineering red flags, tips. Those have been recently published by a nice group called Know Before. And then some interesting items about security certificates, if we still have time. So let's first start off with the Windows 10 stuff. So Windows 10, if you have a Windows 7 or Windows 8 computer, potentially even a Vista computer, that is capable of being upgraded to Windows 10, you may receive a message in the system tray. Now, the system tray is the area by the clock. And what you don't realize necessarily is that that is not an upgrade that you can just do anytime you want. There was a time when you had to actually sign up for the Windows 10 upgrade. What I've been observing is that that time has passed, but that still does not allow you to force download it if you want to download it. So what I've seen is, even though the icon for the Windows 10 upgrade will sit there in the system tray, it will not allow you necessarily to force the upgrade right now. It will say something like, well, we're due to demand, and in order to ensure that there's adequate support for you in case you run into issues, we're working with our partners and blah, blah, blah. I have no idea who these partners are. I mean, none of that's disclosed. There's no phone number to call if you have issues. I don't know how in the world you would ever expect to get support from some amorphous, you know, cloud support, whatever, associated with that. None of that information is disclosed, so I don't know what they're talking about there. Basically, if you are looking to get support for your computer, you should already have a person or a company that you work with for your as-needed or your regular IT support. That's who you would call. And now, the reason that Windows 10 upgrade has really become quite a big deal since the beginning of January this year is because there was a major problem with Windows 7 updates. So what we saw a lot was Microsoft updates were having issues, and that was only hitting Windows 7 computers. And I only saw one Windows 8 computer, it was a Surface Pro 3 tablet, that had some hiccups in the deployment of Microsoft updates. And after a little persuasion, I was able to get it past that, and then it was quite willing to install the rest of the updates and then actually do a Windows 10 upgrade for me. So my opinion at this point is that, given the fact that the problems with Windows 7 are so widespread, not twofold, okay, twofold. Number one, Windows 7, in my opinion, is not a secure enough operating system anymore. I have seen too many times where, in the same environment, with the same configuration, a side-by-side, head-to-head comparison where you have a Windows 7 machine, you have a Windows 8 machine. The Windows 7 machine got hacked, but the Windows 8 machine did not. So the presumption is that Windows 10 has all the security features and more that Windows 8 had. So now, I'm not suggesting you have to get off of Windows 8. I think it's a very good operating system. The advantage to getting off of Windows 8 is that Windows 10 gives you back the menu system that you all have been used to, the actual start menu with all the things and, you know, all the little menu options. And it has some other features that are quite useful. So clearly it's a more secure operating system too. I think it's more resilient. It has some really nice user management features, even something as simple as being able to control what icons are displayed in the system tray. That's a pretty handy feature for a lot of people that are trying to manage visual display screen size utilization. So my recommendation is to go to Windows 10, but you have to do it at a time that obviously that's going to work for you, but you also have to do it at a time that guarantees that you have full backups of your data first. So if you have not fully backed up all of the data on your computer, and if you are not fully willing to deal with the consequences of an upgrade gone bad, then don't upgrade. I mean, I'm not going to say it's Russian roulette. It's not. So far, I mean, I'd say I've done about 20 Windows 10 upgrades, maybe more, and I have not had any go bad. There are some unexpected things. For example, if you were using the local administrator account, it will disable that. And if you don't already have another local administrator account created before you upgrade to Windows 10, such as a custom admin account, I'm talking about the built-in default administrator account, it will disable that. And you might as well just forget about not using that anymore, because if then, so let's say you had a separate custom local admin account, which you should have, because you certainly shouldn't be browsing the internet as an admin account, and then you do the Windows 10 upgrade, and it disables that local admin account, then you log on as your custom admin account, and you re-enable the local admin account. Well, the next time you do a Windows 10 version upgrade, which they pretty much automatically roll out, that's what they're going to do. You need to be prepared for that. It's a very different, you know, we're in a different realm here. It's kind of like service packs, okay? But now it's called builds. Technically, they were always builds before, but they were referred to as service packs. Now what is happening is that these service packs are getting rolled out automatically. So every time one of those major version builds is applied, it will re-disable the local admin account. So you might as well just forget about using that thing. Just, I mean, seriously, just give it up, because it will just do nothing but frustrate you if you're intending to rely upon using that, and it's getting disabled on you all the time, then you're just going to get frustrated by that. So if you have IT support, I would highly suggest that you just have your IT support people do it. What I've been experiencing is where there's a lot of remediation that is having to be done on about 80% of the machines. Now, when I say remediation, I'm talking about I have seen hard disk corruption that has to be corrected ahead of time. You do not want to be doing a major version upgrade from one OS version to another unless you have verified that the hard drive in the computer does not have corruption issues. And I've seen a lot of issues where the Windows 10 upgrade will not apply, will not even begin to install, because the computer is not fully up to date with Microsoft updates, and it's having issues. So in some cases, those updates have to be manually downloaded one at a time and installed, and in some cases you have to do Windows repair, disk cleanup, other troubleshooting and resolution steps, and it can be incredibly time-consuming, and it requires quite a lot of technical skill to be able to get the computer to the point where it can do the Windows 10 upgrade. Now, on the other hand, I've seen circumstances where, you know, the computer's all happy, and you just do the Windows 10 upgrade, and, you know, it's okay. Realize, though, that Windows 10 is not supported on all hardware. There is most definitely a chance where you will be presented an image in your system tray that says, hey, you can upgrade to Windows 10. But the question is, did you check the hardware manufacturer's website to verify that that particular model of your computer is actually supported for Windows 10? Now, if it's not, that doesn't mean that you shouldn't upgrade to Windows 10. It means that you risk taking the chance that if you upgrade to Windows 10, you may not be able to obtain some drivers for some of the components of the computer. Now, that being said, based upon all the Windows 10 upgrades that I've done, there have really not been any issues. There's been some unexpected things, and you deal with them, and you move on, but there hasn't been anything that has been some sort of a, oh my gosh, you know, I wish we wouldn't have upgraded to Windows 10 sort of a catastrophe. No, not in the least bit. You do want to check your printer before you upgrade to Windows 10. You need to make sure that there is a Windows 10 driver for that particular printer that you have. Either that or you need to be prepared to go get a new printer. And, you know, maybe it's time to get a new printer anyways. All right, so what if you've done your backups and you've got your secondary custom admin account and you are all in that place where you say, okay, this is it. I'm going to do the Windows 10 upgrade. Okay, so you double-click on your little icon in the system tray for the Windows 10 upgrade, and it tells you that you can't do the upgrade right now. And the reason you can't do the upgrade right now is because they are trying to load balance the demand on their support partners. Again, I have no idea who these people are. I find it interesting that none of that information is disclosed in that message. And you say, no, I wasn't going to call them anyways, so I just need to force the update right now. Okay, so what you need to do then is you need to do one of two things. You need to either go get the Windows Update PowerShell module and install it and use it on that computer, or you need to get the Windows 10 Media Creation Tool, which is not just a media creation tool, but it is a tool that will allow you to force Windows 10 upgrade. And it's nice. It has a couple different options. One, it says, would you like to just upgrade to Windows 10 on this computer right now? And you can say, yes, upgrade. The other option is to create an ISO, and then the ISO could be burned to a DVD, and you could boot the computer from that and all that. Now, let's talk about why you may or may not want to do that. So first of all, I've had quite a lot of success with forcing upgrade using the Windows 10 Media Creation Tool. It's a very nice tool. You do need to be aware there's a 32-bit and a 64-bit version of it, though. Now, the way that Windows 10 licensing works is this. Really important that you understand this. If your computer has been deemed to be eligible for Windows 10 upgrade, then, and you do the Windows 10 upgrade in place, then your computer in that process will reach out to the Microsoft licensing servers, and the Microsoft licensing servers will retain a piece of information that verifies that that particular hardware is authorized for Windows 10. So, this is really important. If your computer ever blows up and you need to reinstall it from scratch using an ISO or that bootable media, then you can, and you can go directly to Windows 10, because what it will do during the build process is it will reach out, talk to the Microsoft licensing server, and it will say, yes, this computer is authorized for Windows 10. Really important. If you do not do the in-place upgrade from Windows 7 or Windows 8 to Windows 10, that licensing information will never have an opportunity to get into the Microsoft licensing server, and you will not be licensed for Windows 10 on that computer, okay? So even if you say to yourself, well, you know, Felicia, you know, you talked about secure boot and the trusted platform module and the enhanced BitLocker capabilities, and so, you know, you convinced me that I really wanted to do UEFI secure boot, so I scrapped the previous installation and installed from scratch. in order to get that. Well, I would say, you know, kudos to you for focusing on security, but at the same time, in order to achieve the licensing change implication that you want to achieve, you would have had to have already executed a Windows 10 upgrade in place, because only through that process does the computer reach out to the Microsoft licensing server and say, yes, this piece of hardware is authorized for Windows 10. Now, once you've done that, then you can wipe that computer and boot from the ISO or the bootable media, and then you can install Windows 10 with the TPM secure boot. All right. So now let's talk about TPM and secure boot. Windows 7 did not give you the ability to do UEFI boot. It was only BIOS boot. Now, BIOS boot is vulnerable to a lot of things. And UEFI has an option for secure boot, assuming that you have a TPM module in your computer. The TPM is called the Trusted Platform Module. It is an on-motherboard chip that has hardware-level encryption in it. And this is one of the reasons why I always recommend that you buy your computer equipment from a competent IT service provider who actually understands security. There's a lot that don't. Okay, I'm just be blunt about it. For example, whenever I spec a computer for anyone, it doesn't matter whether they're a home user or what, that computer will have vPro and it will have a TPM. These are not expensive options. You're talking about adding like $30 to the total cost of the computer. So if you're buying a computer with a 5-year hardware warranty on it, which, yes, that's what I always get, is a 5-year hardware warranty. If somebody's selling you hardware with a 1-year or a 3-year warranty on it, I think you're getting shortchanged, frankly. So if you're looking at the value of the TPM and vPro over that 5-year time period, you're talking about, you know, chicken feed in terms of cost over that 5-year time period for that extra 30 or $35. I mean, it's in the big whoop and do category at that point. So there's no reason to not get it as far as I'm concerned. Because if you want to have security, if you want to have your data secure, if you want to make sure that you're doing as much as you can so that the hackers don't get you and your stuff, then you need to have vPro and a TPM so that you can do secure boot with full BitLocker, where you have to put in a decryption key at boot mode. So let's go back to the whole thing of you've got a Windows 7 computer and you want to upgrade it to Windows 10, and then you want to have secure boot. So this is what it's going to look like. If you do that upgrade in place from Windows 7 to Windows 10, you're going to deal with the licensing thing. So it reaches out to the Microsoft licensing server, and it stores your hardware profile in the Microsoft licensing server, and it says, yes, this computer is authorized for Windows 10. So now, great, you have achieved that. But what you don't yet have is a computer that is using UEFI boot. Well, as I said before, you want to use UEFI boot because BIOS boot, which is the old method, is vulnerable to a lot of attacks. So at that point, I certainly would get the Windows 10 Media Creation Tool rip the ISO, rip it to a DVD or a bootable USB flash drive, and then boot the computer from that and rebuild the computer from scratch. Now, if you're going to do that, you really need to be very serious about doing that. You've got to have backups. You've got to be willing to reinstall the drivers from scratch. You've got to have the license information for all the software that's on your computer that you wish to put on there. So if you've got Microsoft Office on there, then you'd really better make sure that you have all those license key codes and stuff. So that is the only way that you're going to get UEFI secure boot. Now let's talk a little bit about the BitLocker encryption key stuff and the ability to get a really nice secure boot methodology going on where you have to put in a password before you can boot up the computer. Now, there's been a lot of mathematical research into the crack time for a brute force attack on pins. And this is really very relevant because this information is not just about booting your computer. This is also affecting the security of your mobile devices, like your phones. What the mathematical research has determined is that if you actually want to have adequate security where you are requiring a brute force attacker to have an unreasonable amount of time to crack your PIN, then you need to be using a minimum of 10 characters. Yes, this is very important. A minimum of 10 characters. So this now means you should have a 10-char PIN on your phone. This whole era of the four-digit PIN, I mean, it's so far dead, it's ridiculous. My understanding is that they can hack and brute force attack a four-character PIN in less than 10 minutes. So in that context, are you using a four-digit PIN on your debit card? If you are, then that's not a real good idea either. Maybe you should go to an 8 or a 10-character PIN on your debit card. So you would want to be using at least a 10-character PIN for your secure boot decryption code. There's two different secure boot decryption code types you can use. One is alphanumerics, and then the other one is just straight up numerics. And as I said, if you're going to use straight up numerics, then you need to be going with a minimum of 10 characters. You can go all the way up to 16, but I really wouldn't go past 16. So in order to use that, though, you have to do some interesting things inside of GPEdit before you attempt to turn on BitLocker. Whatever the settings are that you have in effect in group policy or local policy on that computer at the time that you turn on BitLocker, that is what is going to dictate the encryption profile. So if you did not have the TPM policy settings configured and your TPM recovery password already, okay, you need to configure that too, which you can do that by going into the TPM software on your computer. So you need to go into gpedit.msc typically, or in the case of a domain environment, your domain administrator would have already configured some really nice things with regards to TPM, which should include the automatic storage of the recovery encryption key into Active Directory for that endpoint. So you can do that. If you're a domain admin, you can go look up how to do that, and you should definitely do that for your staff. But if you're just a home user, or you don't have an Active Directory domain, and you want to do this on your particular computer, then by all means, just go into gpedit.msc and then configure the TPM encryption settings in group policy. This really isn't that hard to figure out. Just do a little internet searching on it, and you'll find articles on it. Now, what you're looking to do is to specify that there is a boot password required, and then you're going to specify what type of a boot password is required. Is it alphanumerics? Is it just strictly numerics? What is the minimum character length for the numeric or the alphanumeric? Now, once you've configured those things, and then you go about your business of going into the control panel and turning on BitLocker, then you end up with automatic prompting then say, oh, well, what would you like your decryption PIN to be? Now, if you hadn't done that stuff prior, BitLocker will allow you to encrypt your whole hard drive with no prompting. And my personal opinion is that having encryption is better than not having any encryption. However, if you're going to have a laptop, okay, if you're going to have a laptop, you should definitely have a laptop with a boot pin. Now, if you happen to be an executive at a company that you're concerned about Customs and Border Patrol making a copy of your stuff, or if you're ever concerned about having to boot up your computer under duress, there is an option where you can use a piece of software called DriveCrypt Plus Pack, made by a company called SecureStar, and it's a very nice piece of software, actually. And that will allow you to put in a duress password. The duress password is not your regular decryption password. When you put in the duress password, the people observing you put in the duress password do not know that that is your duress password. You put it in, and what it does is it will boot that computer up, and it will boot it into a another operating system instance that does not have all of your stuff decrypted in it. So this is incredibly valuable stuff because you can be compelled to boot up your computer at the TSA or at Border Patrol or at any of those sorts of places. And you may have to put in your duress password and get your computer to boot up, and then they're going to want to look through your stuff. So you are better off, if you are concerned about those sorts of things, to use a product like DriveCrypt Plus Pack. So that's it for the Windows 10 stuff. Well, actually, I've got one other little tidbit for you. I have found that 256 gig is no longer a really good hard drive size for laptops. A lot of laptops that have SSD hard drives, and I think you all know my position on laptop hard drives, they should all be SSDs, not only for resiliency but also performance, then 256 being tight, you really need to be doing Disk Cleanup Wizard before and after the Windows 10 upgrade, using an admin account and really basically just cleaning out everything. You may even want to manually clean out the Windows Temp folder or the Windows Logs CBS folder. You really may want to just manually clean those out in addition to using the Disk Cleanup Wizard. I've found that in many cases, there's a bunch of temp files that are just hogging up space, and your Windows 10 upgrade will not be successful if you do not have adequate space for that. So let's look briefly at the social engineering red flag tip sheet, and it's all the type of stuff that we've been hearing in the IT community for a long time, but it's the type of things that I think everybody should be reminded of. You know, you look at the content, you figure out if the content, does it logically fit together or not? Is the subject relevant? Is it consistent with the content? Is it from somebody that you know or don't know? What is the date? Was it sent to you at 3 a.m.? Because that could be a red flag. What sort of attachments are associated with it? If there's a call to action in the email, such as a hyperlink, and it looks like a reasonable hyperlink, but then when you mouse over it, the hyperlink is actually shown to be something else, going someplace else, then that's a giant red flag. So in all those circumstances, those are typically referred to social engineering red flags. I will post the link to this very nice PDF. If you have employees, you may want to download this PDF and print it and put it in some place that the staff is normally going to see, like the lunchroom or something like that, because it could be really useful as a staff education tool. Well, that's it for this week. I hope you enjoyed the show. And as always, if you have questions, do send me an email at breakfastbites@gmail.com.
You've been listening to Breakfast Bites, a program designed to help you navigate computer technology and the Internet. The show airs the first and third Saturdays of every month and is hosted by Felicia King. To contact Felicia, visit her website, qualityplusconsulting.com.